sustainability and the environment to paid volunteer time for employees. A number of companies have built their brands and boosted their profits on their reputations as good corporate citizens or companies that care. But as our guest today says, those stories aren't always as rosy as they sound. Some big-name companies have earned a reputation for offering better benefits for workers or being greener than the competition, but few have been able to reach every ideal in the pantheon of social responsibility. Other companies look only to create a perception that they're responsible and to reach consumers who are often willing to pay higher prices for products they believe to be sustainably or ethically produced. And critics question whether businesses should focus less on policies like paid volunteer time and put their focus back on the bottom line. Today in The Exchange, conscientious consumerism, the challenges, opportunities, and concerns around corporate social responsibility. Let's hear from you, too. How much do you care if your business is greener, pro-union, or just plain socially responsible? Will you pay extra money on a company whose values match yours, or do you think corporations have gone too far into these issues? Call in The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Or email us at exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post comments on our Facebook page. Our guest today is Fran Hawthorne, an award-winning journalist, and she's been a writer or editor at Fortune, Business Week, Institutional Investor, and other publications. She's the author of four other books, including Inside the FDA, and her latest is Ethical Chic, the Inside Story of the Companies We Think We Love. Fran, welcome to The Exchange.
And thank you for inviting me, Brady.
We've always known that price and quality aren't necessarily everything when we're choosing products and services. But how did this idea of ethics, or at least perceived ethics, become a big part of the decision-making process for so many consumers?
You know, I think the interest has been growing. You could date it back to the 1960s, really, with the publication of Silent Spring, the awareness of environmental problems, of course, growing examples where people were getting diseases that shouldn't have happened, that were supposedly rare, and you would see these clusters that turned out to be connected with corporate pollution. So these kinds of events increased consumer awareness, along with the whole trend toward, you know, social responsibility, responsibility toward other people, the whole trends that led to the civil rights movement, the feminist movement, the gay rights movement. So it's all been growing together, and then people started realizing, well, you know what? My dollars can have power, too. I can use my dollars to do more than just buy a good. It can also buy social goods.
Now, what's the breakdown these days among consumers? How many are saying, yes, I would actually be willing to pay a little bit more for a company that I feel matches my values? And how many are saying, I'll just buy the product that I like best or that costs the least?
There have been a few surveys. It is still certainly a minority of customers who use their ethics as one of the factors in shopping. The prime factor for most people is probably still price, especially in this economy. And I happen to consider price, in fact, an ethical issue that companies need to consider. There are also other things, you know, durability, quality of product, fashion. There are many things that people take into account. But the use of ethics is a growing factor. It depends on the survey, maybe 20%, you know, their surveys are all over the place.
But as that number grows, even companies who aren't necessarily, you know, built on the idea of social responsibility are starting to pay attention and say, this is, if not an issue for us values-wise, it's certainly an issue for us business-wise.
Exactly. Companies are realizing that there is a strong segment of the consumer population that cares about this, that being ethical can also save companies money. There's a real myth out there that it costs more, and it doesn't always. And, of course, it can be a great marketing gimmick for companies, which is a real issue that consumers have to be aware of, which is the hype and which is real.
Now, one question that comes to mind here when we talk about corporate social responsibility is exactly what values fall under that umbrella. And so far, there really isn't one universally accepted definition.
If that's a good point. There isn't one. Usually, if you bring up the issue of corporate social responsibility ethics, the first thing people think of is the environment. And that's definitely a big one. It's probably the biggest in the sense that it has more components, more different ways to be environmentally conscious, and more public awareness. But there are other factors. A lot of people think about working conditions. People, again, first thing they tend to think of is overseas sweatshops, the kind of issue that came up with Nike and Apple. But there's also conditions here in the U.S. and the issue of being unionized or not. And people think about treatment of animals, testing on animals, humane treatment, use of animal ingredients. Other issues, as I mentioned, I do think price is an issue. I also include something most people don't think about that I call community service, community activism, which can be everything from political donations to what I consider one of Starbucks's most ethical values, the fact that it is a community open space. You can walk in there with your laptop and sit there for hours and use the restrooms, and you never even have to spend $4 on a latte, although I think they would like you to. So there's a whole different range of things that can be included in CSR, corporate social responsibility.
One that you brought up in the book as kind of a question was, does social responsibility require transparency? And you mentioned Apple a moment ago, which is well known for not divulging a whole lot about its operations, or at least not until there's public pressure to do so. Is that a necessary requirement for a company to be considered socially responsible?
I certainly think it's an important factor, and I'm glad you brought it up. Is it necessary? That's an interesting question. Again, it comes back to being a juggling act. No company is perfect, as you said at the beginning. So as a consumer, you look at the company and you say, gosh, it's good in this and it's bad in this. As a consumer, I guess you put down your bottom line and you may say, if you're a vegetarian, you'll probably say, if it uses animal ingredients, that's my bottom line. I won't buy it. So you're going to have to set your bottom line. I do say that transparency is the most important of the values, because without that, we can't even know if a company is doing any of the others. But you may disagree, of course.
And that brings up another question that I had, and you talk about this in the book, is the idea that even if the information is out there, there's not necessarily a common way or an easy way to compare products that are based on, say, an eco-friendly standard. We don't have, you know, with nutrition, we have the label on every food product that can quickly tell us this one has more fat, this one doesn't. But we don't necessarily have that for boots, that we could say this one was more sustainably produced, this took less energy to create than another company's boot.
Funny you mentioned boots, because of course one of the companies in my book Ethical Chic is Timberland,
and based in
Timberland,
New Hampshire.
Yes, indeed, and perhaps uniquely, I always have to be careful with the word unique, so I have to say perhaps uniquely, Timberland does put a label that's similar to that nutrition label on its shoes and boxes, saying things like how many trees the company planted and how much renewable energy was used and whether the item contains, you know, PVCs. I don't know of other companies doing it, though there has been some talk in that industry of trying to create some standards. But you're absolutely right. There are no overarching standards. There are a few. I mean, there's the fair trade designation, which is really useful only for coffee, tea, and chocolate. There's no industry-wide fair trade designation for clothing, for instance. So there are a few specific designations. There are a few websites and organizations that try to rate different companies, and I used these in my book, you know, and you can go to some of the ones I mentioned. But there is no big overarching organization like a Consumer Reports that it would be an Ethical Reports that would be out there saying, here's how we grade the companies. It does require some legwork on each person's part, unfortunately.
Today on The Exchange, we're talking about conscientious consumption. The author of a new book says there are many issues to consider when deeming a business socially responsible, both for the consumer and for the companies themselves. In some cases, there are uncomfortable trade-offs, and it can be nearly impossible to fulfill every ideal. Let's hear from you at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org. You mentioned Timberland is one of the six companies that you profile in the book. Another one is Toms of Maine, so that's two companies that are from New England. Several others are on the West Coast. Starbucks is in Seattle. There's Apple and American Apparel, which are in California. Are there certain parts of the country that seem to be more fertile ground than others for these efforts towards social responsibility?
Well, the cliche, of course, is that the coasts, the two coasts, are the most, you know, liberal, the most concerned about social issues. Of course, the other cliche is that any sort of university town, any area that's got attracting a young urban population, maybe a tech center will attract people like this. But on the other hand, for example, for my last book, I went to Iowa and gave some talks there, and there's a huge liberal community in Iowa. So it's hard to generalize. One always tries to avoid these cliches. Perhaps there is something about the woods and the individualism in New Hampshire. Don't forget, also, another company that started up in New Hampshire that's considered socially responsible and natural is Burt's Bees. So, you know, maybe there is something about the water there. I don't know.
We're talking about conscientious consumption today on The Exchange with Fran Hawthorne. Her new book is called Ethical Chic, and we'd love to hear you in this conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send us a short email at exchange@nhpr.org. We're just about to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Fran Hawthorne about the book, and we'll talk more about New Hampshire companies, including Timberland, which is one of the six companies that she features and profiles in her book. We'll have more after a short break. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is NHPR. It's 9:19. Good morning, and more on conscientious consumerism on The Exchange on NHPR. At 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, super PACs in the 2012 presidential election. New Hampshire weather today, mostly sunny, a chance of an isolated afternoon thunderstorm in a few spots, highs from 80 to 88 degrees. Tonight, clear and comfortable, low temperatures in the 50s. Mostly sunny tomorrow, highs 85 to 90 degrees, and Friday, partly sunny, highs 85 to 90. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And Dartmouth Hitchcock, providing online health tools and podcasts for a healthier New Hampshire. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Today on The Exchange, what it means to be a socially responsible business or a socially responsible consumer. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook, so we hope you'll go to our Facebook page and join the conversation there. Our guest is Fran Hawthorne, an award-winning journalist, and she's been a writer or editor at Fortune, Business Week, Institutional Investor, and a number of other publications. She's the author of four other books, including Inside the FDA. We're talking about her newest book, Ethical Chic, the inside story of the companies we think we love. One of the companies, Fran, that you feature in the book is Timberland, which, of course, is based in Stratham, New Hampshire. And it's known for having a very detailed statement about its values and its commitment to social responsibility. I found it interesting that the company didn't necessarily start out intending to be one of those companies.
Exactly. Of course, it originally started more than half a century ago as something called the Abington Shoe Company, which just made basic rugged shoes and shipped them to other companies which put their own labels on. So no one had ever even heard of Abington. Then it was bought by Nathan Swartz in 1952, in the early 50s, and still kept that type of operation and slowly changed. And it has had many different iterations over the years. It was a rugged boot. It was a fashion boot. It was a hip-hop boot. And it's gone back and forth, and now is sort of all of those. But it really started out as just trying to be the kind of shoe that was popular and well-made and never really had an effort or thinking about, you know, the environment or workers' rights, which you've got to remember back in those days companies really didn't think about. And nothing really started until about, I think it was 1989, when a group called City Year, which is been called an urban Peace Corps. It's a nonprofit that gets young people to, you know, work for a year, volunteer, do work in city areas. And it asked Timberland to donate 50 pairs of boots. And it was one of these things companies do all the time, right? They donate things to charities, and the company did it and did not realize, of course, that that would be the beginning of a whole change.
And that wound up then becoming part of the company's core mission. But at the same time, it was also the target of a campaign by Greenpeace over its leather suppliers. And the company was a little surprised, given its reputation as, you know, one of the companies that cares. And is there a feeling at some of these companies, you know, hey, we're a socially responsible organization, why not go after the other folks who, you know, who don't put these green labels on their boxes or try to live up to these other commitments?
Exactly. These companies feel, and rightly so, that they are doing such good stuff and they are better than your typical company and they should be praised, and all of that, I agree, is true. So then they are surprised and sometimes hurt or angry at being targeted for anything. This certainly happened with Apple, and it happened with Timberland, where it said, you know, we're the good guys. And in fact, however, when it came to issues of the treatment and processing of the leather, Timberland was not a leader in environmental concerns. The biggest problem with leather, a lot of people think it's, oh, you're killing cows and getting leather. That's not actually the issue. Cows are killed for their meat. The hides are a byproduct. They are thrown away or they are turned into leather. So one can't blame Timberland or other shoe companies for that. So they take the leather. The problem is in processing the leather, in tanning the leather, to take it from the rough hide to the nice smooth leather we can use. Traditionally, this is a process that uses a lot of chemicals, dangerous chemicals, that can pollute the water. So, you know, Timberland has been working hard to try and find more natural processing. The other problem is where the cattle are grazed. A lot of them come from South America, and, you know, to create the grazing land, you naturally cut down trees and create more land. And there was great concern about cutting down rainforest, that there wasn't enough supervision to make sure that rainforests were not being cut down to create the grazing land. And Timberland was simply not a leader in these environmental areas. It's very interesting. If I tell you which company is the leader, you will be surprised. Do you want to make any guesses as to which shoe company was a leader in the environmental efforts in South America?
Well, I've read the book, so I actually know the answer, but I'll let you pull the curtain back on this one.
Okay. It's Nike, which, of course, has this reputation for being dreadful because of the concerns, you know, in the 1990s over the conditions in its sweatshops overseas. But in this case, Nike was a real leader. And Timberland was much slower to pressure its suppliers to sign pledges. And so that's why Greenpeace went after Timberland. And Timberland was kind of the obvious target. You see, it's always easier to target a company or a country or a person that you know cares about being seen as socially responsible. You're not going to target a company that doesn't care, where it's not part of the image. Here's a company that wants the good image. So, ironically, it becomes a more easy target. And that's what happened, and that's why the folks at Timberland were taken aback.
And there's a quote in the book from a professor who says he was disappointed in a policy of Starbucks because he said, quote, this is a company we expect to do things differently. So that does come up. I have one more question for you before we bring our listeners into the conversation. Timberland, like a number of these companies, has engaged. They've put forward some product lines that are specifically designed to, they are potentially more eco-friendly, more green, but they're also designed to sell more boots to people who care about those issues. Another example that you bring up in the book is Starbucks, which has worked with local coffee growers in Costa Rica or Rwanda. And the question is that problematic in any way, or is it a case where business interests and social values coincide and that's really what the companies should be aiming for in the whole?
I would like to say that business interests and social values always coincide. I suppose that sounds idealistic. It sometimes costs more in the short run. I think there are people who have shown that this can save money in the long run. Sometimes it saves money in the short run as well. It does create an important image, and the number of consumers who are going to care about this image is going to grow. It helps your company be sustainable because your own supplies will be sustainable if you are not destroying the earth to get your supplies. And the worst thing for a company, if you have a phony image, you will be found out. It will backfire, especially in this day with the internet. Come on, you can't hide anything forever. Some things, unfortunately, get hidden for an awful long time. Maybe financially you can hide things, but certainly not environmentally. So I do think that this is something that all companies are going to have to be considering.
The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And let's hear from Carrie, who's calling from Keene. Hi, Carrie. You're on the exchange.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was listening and hearing about the price point, and two companies come to mind. One with cheaper products, Walmart, but I don't like to shop at Walmart because there's plenty of evidence that they treat women very differently than they treat men in terms of promotions and salary and what they pay them. The other more imminent is that if I'm going off to college, I would like an Apple laptop. And I'm having a hard time.
Sounds like Carrie's starting to break up here, but Fran, she brought up two points. One, she brought up Walmart, and we'll come back to the second point in a moment. But I actually wanted to ask you about Walmart, because that is one of the companies that people who care about social responsibility often point out as sort of an example of what they don't like. Huge company, it brings in products from other places, and doesn't necessarily treat its workers very well. That's the argument anyway. At the same time, you could make the case the company's bringing in local food and it's making strides in energy efficiency. So it has some of the same pros and cons that people care about, yet it does not get that reputation about being a socially responsible company. You could almost say, well, it has the same pros and cons that Apple does, and yet Apple is seen as a much more responsible company.
Yeah, that Walmart is a fascinating example. And first, I want to say, Carrie, thank you for calling. I hope you're still hearing. I know we kind of lost you. Yeah, Walmart is a fascinating and tough choice. First of all, I do not in any way dispute the issue of price. Price is really important. And I just am not going to criticize somebody who feels like he or she has to shop at Walmart because that's the only store within miles that is affordable. That's a real issue. And Walmart is making huge strides in the environmental area. When Walmart says, as it has said, that it is going to pressure its suppliers to provide more energy efficient, let's say, appliances, when Walmart says it will only sell CFL bulbs and it will only use CFL light bulbs, that has a huge good impact on the world. Walmart probably is, as single-handedly has a bigger impact than anything but California and China. It is so big. And those are good things, and I'm glad Walmart has become more environmentally conscious. On the other hand, there are huge problems with its treatment of its workers. The fact that the pay is so low that, they qualify for Medicaid. The stories that have been told about forced overtime, about lying on the time clocks to avoid being, paid overtime pay, about, treatment of prejudice against women, about all other things that there have been lawsuits. These are huge concerns. And, again, obviously each consumer has to make a decision, a juggling act. I would say that one reason Walmart's image is so bad is that the working conditions have been going on for a long time. The environmental improvement is new. So it's still got the old lingering image, some of which is still deserved. It's kind of like Nike, which still has that sweatshop image, and people aren't aware of its efforts to improve the environment. With Walmart, I still think, putting aside the issue of price, I still think the bad outweighs the good, because I just don't think that company has woken up to the real problems with its working conditions. And as well, another issue with Walmart is putting those small local companies out of business because it undercuts on price. But Nike, on the other hand, I think the pendulum has switched. But again, with each customer, you've got to really do your own juggling.
The other issue that Carrie brought up was about trying to buy a laptop as a child goes off to college. And, you know, we've heard some of the controversy about the factories in China that have been making iPads and computers and other tech gear over the last few years. And yet Apple, you know, in particular, has always had this reputation of being really suave, sophisticated, high-minded company. In a way, it almost suggests that consumers take this idea of, well, I see a company that is in line with one or two of the issues that I care very much about, so they probably are in line with the other issues that I care about, which may or may not be the case.
Oh, Apple is a wonderful example, and I'm glad both of you brought it up. Apple is, it's incredible to people who are social activists that Apple somehow has this image of being socially concerned. It isn't. It has never tried to be. It doesn't claim to be. And yet it is exactly what you say, Brady, that people say, well, you know, I am passionate. I passionately care about the environment, and I passionately love my Apple products. So I'm really cool, and I would never do anything unethical. And everybody I know loves Apple products.
And Al Gore is on the board of directors, so therefore.
Exactly, exactly. So it must be ethical. And Apple has been much more slow than all the other tech companies in handling environmental issues, such as creating recycling programs where you can bring in, you know, your used parts to recycle. It usually ranks worse than other companies in its industry in all these environmental rankings. There are a whole lot of them. It is no worse but no better than the others in terms of the sweatshops in China. The big factory that we've all heard of, Foxconn, makes products for Dell and Hewlett-Packard as well as Apple. So whatever's going on there is equally shared. The blame's equally shared. But it's certainly not a leader in improving things. So it's just got this reputation. Now, in fairness, in the last few years, Apple has improved. It has started working on its environmental problems. It is now tracking things like, you know, the energy and the emissions, and removed certain bad chemicals from its products. It is investigating and hired a monitor to investigate the conditions in China, and has actually published the report. That's unheard of, that Apple actually provided information. So it is improving, but it has definitely not been a leader. But as you said, it has this image, totally unshakable. It's the most profitable company in the world. Everybody loves it. You know, of course, whatever it does is going to be seen as right.
The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Carrie, thank you so much for that call. Let's take another listener now. That's Sally in Portsmouth. Sally, hi, you're on the exchange.
Good morning.
Go ahead with your question.
Well, I wanted to share with you that I worked previously for a company that you mentioned here in the report, and I'm curious to know if the author had a chance to speak with people actually have worked at the companies other than just examining their socially responsible activities. And just as an example, in my own personal experience, I know at least three employees who were lost their jobs due to strange activities in terms of, for example, one employee was on her maternity leave, a three-month maternity leave, which this company had a very generous policy. And on the day she was to return to her job, was informed that she no longer had a job at the company and was let go. And another close friend was actually away on a sabbatical, which is a very big proponent of this company's CSR practices, and they advertised it and promoted it heavily. And due to various stipulations within that program, she was also informed that she lost her job before she was intending to come back, and that was a very big I think faux pas on their part, in terms of they initially told her that she'd be heavily promoting and doing a lot of PR on behalf of the company because of the extent of this particular sabbatical and where she was working. And when it became known that her job was going to be given away to somebody else in the company, all contact with the company pretty much stopped. She didn't get any support while she was away.
Sally, thank you so much for bringing that up. And Fran, a lot of issues brought up there. This idea of sort of what does it necessarily mean when you have a company that's that's got high ideals, and then the reality of business sets in, and there's conflict in businesses, and sometimes it's not necessarily to the worker's benefit.
Hi, Sally. Thank you for calling in. I did speak with people at some of the companies, not all of them. I wish I had talked to more. You know, it's obviously hard to get access. In some companies, indeed, the image is just not true. At Starbucks, think Starbucks, Trader Joe's, American Apparel all had very nasty union organizing attempts in the sense that the companies were very nasty in fighting back. In fact, Starbucks was cited by the National Labor Relations Board and penalized, and so was American Apparel for the ways in which they fought back. So clearly, you know, these are examples where companies were not treating their workers nicely. I mean, workers were demoted or lost their jobs, workers who had been very active in the union organizing efforts. In Toms of Maine, for example, is not unionized, and I asked Tom Chappell, the founder, why, and he, again, got personally sort of almost insulted, the same way that Howard Schultz at Starbucks gets when you talk about unions. It's kind of something Brady was talking about before, where they feel like we are socially responsible, we are good people, we are better than most companies. We don't need a union because you can trust us, we're good people. How can you even question why people who work here wouldn't be happy?
And we're going to pick that up when we come back from a short break with Fran Hawthorne, author of Ethical Chic. The exchange phone number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. We'll be back with more after a short break.
By now, you know you can donate your old car to NHPR. And you know how easy we make it by filling out the paperwork for you, picking up the car, and auctioning it off. But what you may not realize is that we accept more than just cars. You can donate anything to our vehicle donation program, from a snowmobile to an RV to a boat. Find out more at NHPR.org or give us a call and get the process started at 1-877-393-NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and the Scott Larson Companies, protecting your company's most valuable asset, your people, through workers' comp, wellness, and health and safety services, healthierworkers.com, and Hypertherm, an associate-owned manufacturer of metal cutting equipment made in New Hampshire and sold worldwide, hypertherm.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we discuss ideas for a new grand strategy for American foreign policy. Email us your thoughts to exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning at 9. Today, we're talking with Fran Hawthorne, the author of the book Ethical Chic, The Inside Story of the Companies We Think We Love. She says there are many issues to consider when deeming a business socially responsible, both for the consumer and for the companies themselves, and in some cases, there are uncomfortable trade-offs. Let's hear from you as well at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Fran, we also got an email earlier on, and this is from Maura in Concord. She brings up an interesting point. She says, consumerism, the incessant drive to get new stuff, is inherently problematic. Eco-friendly products might be less bad than regular ones, but it still takes finite natural resources to produce and transport them, and they still support the emotionally troubling mindset that we need to consume to be happy. Genuine environmental responsibility means buying less stuff, period. What do you make of Maura's thoughts here?
Oh, absolutely. I agree, Maura, and I hope you're listening. And in fact, I do discuss this in the book. You can argue that, well, we shouldn't be buying anything from any of these companies. You know, do we need another laptop? We need a few pairs of shoes. How many more do we need? And it is a troubling point for many activists. Then you say, but gee, if I didn't buy another pair of Timberland boots or another tube of Tom's toothpaste, well, not only would my teeth rot if I didn't use toothpaste, but then they would lay off their workers, and then you know, workers wouldn't have jobs. And so that's not a good thing. So I think none of us can be, you know, living in a cave, using nothing. So again, it becomes an issue of balancing and compromise. You know, Maura does raise the good point that since we're going to have some consumption, let's try to buy things from ethical companies. Let us certainly absolutely limit our consumption. One suggestion I would make is, could you possibly use last year's iPhone? I mean, do you really need the newest iPhone? I think that would help a lot. When you go to Starbucks, bring your own little mug or thermos or something to put the coffee in instead of wasting the paper in those throwaway cups. So there are ways that we can definitely reduce our consumption while still having a sort of a nice lifestyle and supporting these ethical companies.
And that Starbucks example you brought up, which, you know, Starbucks winds up using huge numbers of disposable cups. And you know, that brings up the question of, like, whose responsibility is it to think ahead, to bring that travel mug, to, you know, to bring the tote bag to the grocery store? But and it also it makes me wonder, are consumers buying certain products that maybe reflect their values and feeling that, okay, I've done my part because I bought the eco-friendly toothpaste, which may or may not really mean our energy consumption goes down?
Unfortunately, right, we consumers can be as smug as the companies are. And we feel, you know, we bought the eco-friendly toothpaste, and then we don't think twice about hopping in our gas guzzler car or whatever. Again, we're not perfect. No company is perfect. No person is perfect. And I don't want to make everyone feel guilty if we don't, you know, farm, live off the land entirely. But there are things that you can do, definitely, that really don't impinge your lifestyle very much. Very simple thing, of course, is turn off the lights when you leave a room. That's a really easy one, and you'd be surprised. Or here's one that I thought was a no-brainer, and yet I see so many people do it. Turn off the water while you're brushing your teeth. No. Little things like that that you can do just in ordinary life. And in terms of being a consumer, right, bring your own bags. Now, Trader Joe's, for example, but most grocery stores do this now. They also will sell reusable bags. So their responsibility is to provide the bags. I would prefer even better, of course, if it were a store like Costco, which simply doesn't provide disposable throwaway bags at all. You bring your own, or you use the cartons, or you just cope. But, you know, most stores don't go that far, but at least provide. They could also, stores could encourage it more by saying, by not just offering you a plastic bag, by waiting for you to ask, by saying we have these reusable canvas bags. Starbucks could do the same thing with the cups. So I think the responsibility is on both sides.
Let's bring in another listener into the conversation. This is Andrew calling from Newmarket. Hi, Andrew. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I own three pairs of Timberlands, and I'm aware of the environmental and, you know, social things that they do. But their products manufactured in China, and I'm wondering what your guest thinks about overseas manufacturing and environmental image. Is it greenwashing, or are there efforts meaningful in any sort of way?
A very big question there, Andrew. And Fran, we have not yet really talked about the impact of globalization on big companies and whether that affects social responsibility.
Yeah. Hi, Andrew. Thank you for calling. That is an issue. Sure, ideally, I wish that all products were made in really nice, you know, unionized shops. In the U.S., well, gee, I don't know. The people in other countries need jobs, too. That's a tough choice right there. But let's face it, costs are too high. Companies are not going to make their goods here in the U.S., although some manufacturing is coming back. But clothing is going to be made overseas. So in that case, then the next step is to make sure that they are respected monitoring groups that are visiting these factories, that are investigating, that the companies are pushing the governments of those countries to, you know, raise their legal limits, their, you know, requirements, their minimum wages, that the companies are paying above the minimum wage, so that the companies and the outside monitoring groups at least are being good employers and good observers to make conditions better. Now, Timberland is pretty good at this. It does have outside groups come in. You know, it does say that, you know, it pays over the minimum wage. It doesn't pay a living wage, which is what advocates would like to see. So, you know, it's certainly better than most. It's not ideal. So I just think that at least as consumers, we can be, you know, on top of companies for doing this and writing letters, you know, doing research to try and make sure at least that if they're going to manufacture overseas, that they're keeping an eye on the conditions there.
Andrew, thank you so much for that call. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Now, when we talk about the issue of American companies doing business in China, doing their manufacturing overseas, the common argument has been that it's primarily an issue of cost. And of course, costs have been going up in China. And so companies have had to consider that over the last few years. But this idea of cost, and you mentioned it, a lot of the companies moving overseas because they feel it's too expensive to do business fully in the United States. And I wanted to ask you, Fran, what about that argument that, you know, you hear of a socially responsible company that says, you know, our products cost more, but we're doing business in America and maybe 5% of our profits are going to charity. And a consumer might, first of all, say, well, why not just charge 5% less for these products and let me decide what to do with my money instead of charging me the premium for your values?
Well, of course, the companies that will say, like, we're donating 5% to charity are probably also doing other ethical things. So it's not that simple to say, I will go to Walmart and then I will take the money I saved and donate it to charity, because Walmart is also not treating its own workers so well. So I do think you have to look at the whole picture and say, okay, Tom's of Maine donates a certain percentage to charity, but in addition, Tom's uses all natural products, you know, and it doesn't test on animals and all these other important values. You know, so I think that price is, of course, a tough issue, as we've said before. You know, to some degree, you pay as a consumer, you choose what you're going to pay for. You may pay higher, let's say, for an Apple laptop because it has a reputation for having fewer viruses and lasting longer, or just because you've got to be cool, or whatever reason. You know, you may pay more for Tom's toothpaste because you don't want the chemicals and other toothpastes in your body. So it's just going to be what you're willing to pay for.
And at the same time, there's an argument that the effort to create these socially responsible businesses drives up the price, and that creates sort of a class issue that, you know, if Starbucks is charging $5 for a cup of coffee that might have cost $1 or $2 at a different cafe, then that may be putting the idea of just going to the neighborhood coffee shop out of reach for a lot of consumers, and that's worrisome.
It is. It is a definite issue that, you know, I've talked about. The issue that, you know, can only the wealthy, you know, afford socially responsible goods. And when I talk to people, let's say, at Tom's, at Timberland, they do point out that their products are available often at, you know, discount stores, at their Tom's outlets, you know, and their Timberland is sold at DSW. So to some degree, they do have discounted versions of their products. But it is a tough one. Now, Apple, as I said, the argument is that you pay for the quality, the long-lasting quality. And Timberland also, that you're paying for shoes that will last longer, which is probably true in both cases. They probably are more long-lasting.
The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. I wanted to bring David into the conversation. He's calling from Littleton. David, thanks for calling. You're on the exchange. I think we just lost David. Oh. Sorry about that. Hopefully we'll get him back. Let's bring in another listener at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Ray is calling from Manchester. Hi, Ray. You're on the exchange.
Hi. Thank you. My comment, I'm enjoying your show, but very concerned with the comment that your guest just made that she would prefer all businesses to be unionized. I guess I'd like her reasoning for that.
Okay, Ray, thanks for calling. And Fran, do you want to address that issue of the union issue, which we talked a little bit about, but it's worth bringing up again?
Hi, Ray. Well, of course, it was a kind of ideally, as I said, it's not going to happen. But I'm using unionized in a way to stand for the idea of companies that treat their workers well, that pay decently, that have good working conditions, but more important than that is that there is some accountability. that it doesn't just depend on the fact that you've got a nice, concerned boss today, because that boss will not be there forever. So you need something that's institutionalized to protect workers' rights that will last beyond an individual person. Now, you're right that this may well not be a union. I mean, only a small percentage of the American workforce is unionized. And that's okay as long as there are ways that workers are treated well and their rights are protected and that these things are going to last. So that's really what I'm talking about.
Ray, thanks for that call. And in a way, you know, you mentioned that sometimes, you know, the CEO who put in a responsible policy may not be the one making the policy decisions going forward. And as we see in the case of Toms of Maine, sometimes the company structure is not necessarily the same because they were sold from they went from being a family-owned company to being part of a much larger corporation.
Right, and that is a real concern for consumers, as we see with many of these beloved, small, all-natural companies that seem to all be from New England. Burt's Bees was bought, Ben & Jerry's was bought, Toms of Maine, Stonyfield Farms. All of these companies have been bought by bigger companies, and consumers have been kind of very eagle-eyed, watching for any sign of change. Oh, and another one, Timberland, was bought a year ago also. So, you know, some companies like Tom's and Ben & Jerry's have negotiated conditions as part of the purchase. Tom Chappell, the founder of Toms of Maine, he and his wife, Kate, they investigated the potential companies that would buy Toms of Maine. They looked to, you know, set up certain conditions. They didn't just investigate the finances of the company, or Colgate, that ultimately bought Tom's. They looked at Colgate's reputation for good working conditions, for energy efficiency, things like that. And they negotiated certain conditions. For example, the factory would stay in Kennebunk, Maine. No one would lose his or her job. So certain things were negotiated. You can do things, hopefully, to preserve the spirit of the original company, but that is a real problem, that there's no guarantee that the corporate pressure for efficiency won't change the spirit of the company that the consumers all loved.
You mentioned accountability a moment ago, and of course unions being one method of trying to bring accountability to a company. And you wrote actually at the start of the book that as you were finishing up and preparing for publication, that several of the companies made big changes. One lost its CEO, Apple, of course, Steve Jobs passed away. Another company, American Apparel, nearly went into bankruptcy. So the pace of change seems to be speeding up, and that I'm sure that has drawbacks for you in your line of work, but could that be good for consumers? I'm thinking, for example, of the debit card fees that were proposed by, I think, Bank of America, and almost immediately pulled back because there was such a quick and furious backlash. So do consumers have more ability to bring the accountability themselves?
I think so. As I said earlier, it is very hard to, for example, maintain a false green image because you will be found out. Thanks to the internet, there are so many ways that people can investigate and spread the word. So I do agree. That's why transparency is so important. I do agree that consumers are gaining power and companies are going to have to live up to their image. They're going to have to listen to consumers, which is why being an ethical company is going to become more and more important.
And lastly, is it possible that since corporate social responsibility really is relatively new, are we moving toward a sort of countrywide or eventually possibly global business model where society expects companies to adhere to higher standards and that it's just a matter of time before we get there? And I'll just ask you real briefly because we're almost out of time.
I'd love to think so. I think we're getting where it's going to become more expected. I don't think it will ever be universal, though.
Well, Fran, thanks so much for talking with us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's Fran Hawthorne, an award-winning journalist. She's been a writer or editor at Fortune, Business Week, Institutional Investor, and other publications. She's the author of four other books, including Inside the FDA. Her latest is Ethical Chic, the inside story of the companies we think we love. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our interns are Samantha Johnson and Claudia Camarino. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields. You can find out more about Fran's book, Ethical Chic, and continue the conversation by going to our website, nhpr.org. And I'm Brady Carlson in for Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Today on Word of Mouth, Microsoft eats digital crow. We'll hear about the company finally embracing tablet technology and its plans to compete on the iStage. And singer-songwriter Chris Smither on making the blues relevant today and finally covering his own songs. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth discovers new sounds in an American tradition. Today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
Keep your spirits up.